The Motor City is burning. How did the Detroit riots influence the music during this era? I'm L.A. Lloyd, and on this Promotion Man podcast, Fred Myers and I discuss Motown meets the Detroit rock scene, and all ends well. And we close out the first season with an amazing finale and special guest, spoiler alert, Alice Cooper.
So before Alice calls in, I kind of wanted to, you know, he's a Detroiter, I'm a Detroiter. We talked about Detroit being kind of the background of this podcast. So for everybody listening to this podcast, I kind of want to paint a picture of Detroit because basically Detroit exploded as a metropolitan city after the Second World War. And in the 1950s were the beginning of the heyday of Detroit and its importance on a global scale. Ford, Chrysler, General Motors, which consisted of Chevrolet, Buick, Pontiac, and GMC, and American Motors were leading the world in automobile production. And the ripple effect it had on the region was monumental.
So the economy was just booming.
Booming. And it was like one of these storybook communities that had it all going on.
Right.
And there were great paying jobs and for people who had no skill sets. I mean, imagine that. Great jobs for people who didn't have an education, an experience. So those jobs were being filled by people traveling long distances to chase the dream of a good job so they could settle down, buy a home, buy a car, raise a family, and live a life that the family before them never had a chance at.
I mean, it's literally like the poster child of living the American dream. I mean, you've got this mad rush of people coming there. They learn how to have a new trade. They can have a great house, family. I mean, it's exactly what you think of, at least from the outside or maybe the inside of the U.S. Just that is the American dream right there in itself in Detroit.
It was. And so people were coming from all over the Deep South, Europe, Asia, and far beyond to take the jobs of the online of the factory assembly lines, where we used to call them, you know, online.
Right.
Because you literally were on the factory line doing this pretty mundane thing every day for 8 hours a day.
Putting the dashboard in the Cadillac.
Exactly.
That was your job.
Exactly. So soon Detroit had this Polish, German, Irish, African-American, Asian, Hungary, Czechoslovakian, pockets of community springing up all over the geographic area. Mm-hmm. And it changed the landscape of the entire city. And it wasn't long before tensions grew. And the idyllic setting of Detroit in the 50s became the clash of cultures in the 60s. So in the core of Detroit, the black community sprung up and the white population soon moved to the suburbs. And I remember when I was five, my parents had moved from the inner city of Detroit to the suburbs.
Right.
So I remember that as a kid. And Detroit is set up like a grid where there's square miles that are connected like 6 mile, 7 mile. I think a lot of people out there have heard of 8 mile because of Eminem's movie.
Right.
And then the other square miles were usually mile markers named from pioneers of Detroit, like Gratiot or Van Dyke. Mm-hmm. So the grid of square miles is where the dividing line between white and black was, and it was 8 Mile Road. So while the tension and cultures collided, the youth were caught in a local dilemma and a national dilemma because of the war in Vietnam. And if you were 18, you had to register for the draft. So Berry Gordy started Motown in 1960. During the 1960s, Motown achieved spectacular success for a small label. They had 79 records in the top 10 of the Billboard Hot 100 between 1960 and 1969.
Wow. That's amazing.
I mean, in 9 years, they had 79 records in the top 10.
That's insane.
We're not even counting the ones that peaked at 12 or 15 or 18.
So Warner Brothers and the New York City labels, they had their eyes on the Motor City for sure.
Well, there's no question. And what happened was Motown had the Supremes, the Temptations, the Miracles, Martha and the Vandellas, the Marvelettes, the Jackson 5, the Commodores, the Isley Brothers, Marvin Gaye, Smokey Robinson, Rare Earth, which was an anomaly because they were a rock band.
Right.
And then Stevie Wonder, to name some of the bigger acts. And then, of course, Detroit had Aretha Franklin. She was signed to Atlantic Records, but she was from Detroit. Mm-hmm. Then in Detroit, the rock artists started to emerge. Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, Rare Earth, Ted Nugent and the Amboy Dukes. Grand Funk Railroad, Bob Seger System, Alice Cooper, MC5, Iggy and the Stooges, Susie Quattro, a band called SRC, and another band called Frost. And all on the heels of old-time blues and jazz of the 30s and 40s that was throughout Detroit.
Right.
So then everything came to a head following the events of the Detroit riots of 1967.
So what escalated that? Do you know the history of where the escalation began? Was it because of, like you said, the separation of the different cultures living in different areas, and then all of a sudden you just started having a clash of the classes? Or what was the spark that started it?
Well, the spark that started it was actually portrayed in a movie that had just come out not too long ago. And it was in the movie theaters, and it didn't last very long. When I watched it, it was really depressing because, as usual, it's some white cop who can start that whole scene of injustice, if mm-hmm. you will. Mm-hmm. But there clearly were tensions going on because all the clash of all these different cultures trying to get along in a scenario where it was difficult with. All of the culture came, territories and whatnot, which is why the white people, if you will, started to just vacate to the suburbs.
Right.
And the African-Americans kind of took over the inner city, and then all the other kind of cultures kind of took their own pockets of neighborhoods.
Right.
You know, I was 12 and living in the suburbs of Warren, Michigan, which was all white. And we watched what was going on the TV news and the fires and the looting and the taking over of the city of Detroit. And they called in the National Guard. And everyone was like scared out of their minds.
Right.
And back then, you have to remember, it's like black and white TV. It's like just regular telephone. Your communication was purely what you saw on the news.
I wonder if when Alice calls in today, if he might, I hope he will, talk about how the rock side of Detroit and the Motown side, I wonder how that community got together, because it seems to me the music community might still kind of have a bond there no matter what genre you were from. I hope he'll touch on that a little bit.
I was a little too young to know, because like Alice is probably the same age as my older sisters. Mm-hmm. But I think music was one of the things that had tied a community together, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it'll be great when he does call in, because we'll see what he says, because he is a Detroiter.
Yeah.
But what I remember really clearly is I have a brother-in-law who is sitting in an easy chair in our family room with a rifle.
Wow.
And he was jumped and brutally beat and was basically left for dead. Because all he did is stop at a red light in the inner city of Detroit, and a bunch of guys just jumped into his car and commanded his car, made him go drive to a specific place, and robbed him and beat the shit out of him. And, wow. And you know, it was one of those things where he really never recovered. He recovered physically, but he never recovered mentally. So between the brothers and the cousins and the neighbors dying in a war we didn't understand in Vietnam, and now a war inside our city that was destroying what was once one of the most populated and prosperous cities in the country, the Motor City was burning.
Yeah,
which was an MC5 song.
Mm-hmm.
And the musicians, regardless of genre, started to spill their guts into their craft of music. I mean, the MC5 were defiant, they were angry, they were fed up, which led to the song Motor City is Burning.
Mm-hmm.
Marvin Gaye was pouring his soul into What's Going On and
right.
Troubled Man.
Yeah.
Iggy and the Stooges were just pushing the boundaries, and the Temptations recorded Ball of Confusion. All of this was the effects of what was happening to our city at that moment in time. And then all the automobile factories started to relocate to the suburbs.
Hmm.
So even Motown moved to Los Angeles in 1972. But in the aftermath of the riots of Detroit was now a mecca for R&B and rock and roll. And the touring bands needed Detroit, and Detroit needed the rock and roll. Some of the bands or groups that were broken out of Detroit list like a who's who of rock and roll.
Well, I got to think, first of all, would be the New York band Kiss writing the song Detroit Rock City. I mean, is that one, I'm sure?
Oh, definitely. I mean, it was, and remember how we talked about Rosalie Trombley and CKLW? Well, she helped give the start to a lot of these bands like The Who and David Bowie. Kiss, Jay Giles, it was their hometown, even though they're from Boston. Obviously, Alice Cooper, but Led Zeppelin got their start, Mott the Hoople, Roxy Music, Queen, Elton John. All of them got their big breaks in the business because of Detroit radio and the Detroit audience, which is just like no other.
So this brings up a good point, because a lot of the bands you brought up were obviously from England, the UK, or who was responsible for importing that music? Was that the labels? Was that just some smart DJ going like, I found this really amazing band, I'm going to put it on the air? So do you know how some of the UK bands managed to get distribution, or at least to the radio stations in Detroit?
Actually, this is me just guessing in theory, because of me being in the business so long.
I smell a cleanup coming.
Quit it. No, I think there's we're always going to have these powerful pioneer air personality DJs that had a pulse on what the kids liked. And I think clearly major markets, Detroit, New York, Atlanta, Los Angeles, Chicago, Philadelphia, you're going to have a specific person there who's got the power to take a song, put it on the radio, and see it through and see if there's a hit there.
Yeah.
And I think because of the power of CKLW in Detroit, and then, you know, we had talked about how the AM signal started to morph over into the FM, which really was embraced by rock and roll. That was really the format that just embraced rock and roll wholeheartedly and started to play deep album cuts. So I think, you know, that's where the Led Zeppelins of the world, Mott the Hoople, you know, but honestly, let's listen to some of their songs. They're very hooky. They were hits.
Yeah.
I mean, they came all the way. My Generation by The Who.
Right.
Or any of the stuff. In fact, you know, I was so heavily influenced by the Beatles, but I'll never forget how important Led Zeppelin was to me.
Yeah.
Because at 12 and 13, I'm playing drums for a band, and we're playing high schools and different stuff. And, you know, that's where Led Zeppelin was huge. So I hope I've given everybody a good kind of overview of the city of Detroit. Because I got to be honest, I moved out of there for Warner Brothers in 1980, and it'll always be my home. It's kind of it's a badge of honor, really, to say I'm from Detroit. And I'd like to introduce to you a guy who created a persona that was emulated and admired by successful bands and audiences from around the world. It's my pleasure to introduce to you a guy who I loved and played his songs on drums when I was 16 in a band. We played Under My Wheels, Be My Lover. And if you listen to the lyrics of Be My Lover, the song was about us. We were from Detroit City, and we played in a rock and roll band. Ladies and gentlemen, Alice Cooper.
Fred, how you doing, man?
I'm good. You know, Margaret Kramer and I have been working on this project. And, you know, because of it, I went to L.A. Lloyd one day and said, hey, man, would you be willing to do a podcast with me? And he said, well, what is it about? And I said, it's really about the promotion, man. I mean, no one's really had that angle of our story of working, you know, the records of the artists that were signed to the label. So I joined Warner Brothers because I grew up in Detroit, and I joined Warner Brothers in 1978. And I think I followed like David Erso or Kenny Batiste, some of those guys. And in Detroit, do you remember those guys?
Oh, yeah, Risto I knew. Yeah, very well, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is Detroit, because of Rosalie and CKLW and how powerful they were, you know, they had two reps in the region. And so I was the Michigan secondary guy that would go to, you know, Flint and Grand Rapids and Lansing and Ann Arbor. And then Richard Woolard, who was my partner at the time, would go call on Detroit and then Rosalie. But there's this question I've always wanted to ask you, because it was kind of, it became somewhat of a legend that one of your songs, Rosalie, was playing, and it wasn't getting the sales and the requests that she wanted. So I think it was Urso that demanded or commanded everybody at WEA to go buy the singles at every record store so it would show up in the reports. Had you ever heard that sort of story?
I never heard that story, but it doesn't surprise me.
Well, yeah.
You know, back then it was the Wild West, you know. The very fact that Alice Cooper, with our image, would have a hit single was pretty revolutionary. Because if you remember back then, there were 40 spots on that top 40.
Exactly.
And you were up against everybody from Frank Sinatra to the Beatles to Led Zeppelin to everybody else. And so for Alice Cooper to have a hit like 18, which didn't sound like anything else on the radio, but what happened was Rosalie's son heard the song, and he went, oh my gosh, that's speaking to me. That's speaking to my whole generation, that song. And she heard him say that, and he said, you got to play this record. This band is so cool. And she put it on, and then it took off, and it was most requested, and it ended up being a huge hit. But to get a hit on CKLW at that time was like, you know what that was like. That was like gold.
I mean, L.A. Lloyd and I are creating 8 episodes in our first season, and when we started, I broke down the definition of what a promotion man was, what we did.
Yeah.
Then the second episode was breaking down the relationship in the history of radio, and then the history of Warner Brothers, and then we broke down the Billboard charts, like what does it take to get a number one record?
Well, it was easy. It was easy back then to do an album, and then listen to it and go, that's the single.
Yes.
You know, that was part of the art.
What was your relationship like with her? Because she's obviously legendary. Did you have a good relationship with her?
Great relationship with her, because her son, like I said, loved the record and saw us at the East Town and the Grandy. And, you know, knew how freaky we were. So he was all about Alice Cooper. You know, it was us, the Stooges, and the MC5 were the three big bands in Detroit. And so at one point when she played the record, we went and played his high school.
Oh, my gosh. That's so crazy. Well, oh, I think God. Iggy actually played my high school. I mean, so.
Yeah. No, we went and played his high school. And then that was sort of like our thank you, you know.
That's awesome.
Wow.
You want to hear something crazy, Alice? I grew up right behind Mitch Ryder because Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, he was living in Warren, Michigan, where I grew up. And so he was literally like, you know, in the suburbs behind me and a couple houses down. And I think his name was Bill Levice.
Yeah. But, you know, let me tell you something. All the bands in Detroit, Seeger, Amboy Dukes, SRC, every band you could think of, we looked at Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels as our big brother.
Wow.
Wow. Well, and with you growing up in Detroit like I did, what I was telling L.A. Lloyd and we were telling the listeners in the podcast, it was like this town was an industrial city that clearly had Motown right in our backyard. You know, which was just changing the culture of R&B music. But then it had these rock and roll bands that were just incredible. All those bands you just said, you know, like SRC, Rare Earth, you know, all these great bands.
Yeah.
And then when you have this Canadian radio station that beams into the Ohio Valley in Indiana and, you know, pretty much the state of Michigan. You know, and what she plays just kind of, it's like a rock going in a pond and it casts that huge wave, if you will. So that's why this podcast has been really exciting. And I'm so thrilled that you were willing to talk with me on the air here with L.A. Lloyd. This is very cool.
Well, you know, I mean, it was living in that era was the coolest era because it would be like the MC5, the Stooges, Alice Cooper, and the Who, you know, at the East Town.
Yeah. And, or Grandy Ballroom.
Are you ever going to see that, you know? And at the same time, we would look down the audience and there would be Smokey Robinson, and there'd be some of the guys from the Temptations.
Wow.
And there would be Marvin Gaye. And they would, because they loved rock and roll. They wanted to hear these rock bands also.
Yeah.
And then when they would play at Rooster Tail or wherever they were going to play, we would all show up.
And, that's, you know, so great.
And we were, if you were a musician in Detroit, even during the riots, we could walk into any black bar during the riots, and we were totally safe because we were not the enemy. We were brothers. We were a rock band, you know. So it was a really great fraternal kind of scene in Detroit then. Motown and rock were in bed together.
Well, that's why this project with Margaret Kramer is so exciting for me to be a part of. And I love her. I don't know her that well.
She's great. She's a force of nature.
Oh, my gosh. I couldn't say it any better, but yet she does it with such class and such finesse.
Yes.
And I want to say one more thing to you, because watching Supermensch was so wonderful to me. Because I always loved you as a kid. I mean, to this day, you know, I'm 64 today and a grandfather of five.
Yeah.
But I grew up in Detroit, and, you know, honestly, you know, Under My Wheels or Be My Lover are some of my great songs from you, because I was in a garage band and played drums.
Nice. Oh, cool.
You know,
yeah.
But the fact of the matter is when I started getting involved with Margaret on this project, it's really about a story about a promotion man growing up in Detroit, who was me, joining Warner Brothers, and what it took to get a song played on the radio. And that's why I had always wondered if you had ever heard that story, because I think it was in the David Urso era.
You know, it very well could have been. We were so detached from what went on to get a record played. We were having a hard enough time, writing the song, getting it recorded, and then we were on tour all the time. So, I mean, what happened in the radio station, we had no idea what was going on there. We just weren't, that wasn't part of our world, you know?
Well, I'm not going to bullshit you. Shep was kind of tough on us local guys. You know, he would call us up.
Yeah.
You know, he would call us up and he would raise holy hell as to why a certain radio station wasn't on your track. And it was like, you know, you hung up with him and you had like the fear of God in you.
and the guy's the sweetest guy on the planet. I've been with him 51 years now, and, you know, we laugh about all that all the time, but that's a different era then, you know?
Of course.
I hope that you're using Under Assistant West Coast Promo Man as your song.
Yeah, we really should, right?
That's good.
We really should.
Yeah. So I want to lead back into that EP you got. I read the release is September 13th. You're paying homage, obviously, to the Detroit sound we've been talking about. Bob Ezrin there, Wayne Kramer, Mark Farner. So what else can you tell us about Breadcrumbs, Alice?
Well, and then we had Johnny B on drums.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, I tried to fill it with as many Detroit players as I could. The Dirt Bombs, you know, we took one of their songs and did it. I kind of went and listened to a lot of the bands that are still in Detroit. The Electric Six, is it? And really found all these really cool garage bands that were just really good bands.
Yeah.
You know, and what we decided was, you know, let's write a few songs, but let's do a couple of versions of these songs that nobody would ever expect us to do.
Yeah.
In homage of Detroit. As many years as I've been out of Detroit, I mean, I lived there, I was born there, so I lived there, I left there when I was 10 because I had asthma. But when people say, where are you from? I go, Detroit. and when you say that in the music business, it's a badge of honor.
It is a badge of honor. And you know what's crazy is I grew up with asthma too. I wonder if it was in the water.
Oh, no, I had to get out of there. And I'm still addicted to White Castles and and Werner's Ginger Ale.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my roommate was Bill Tom, whose dad owned the Harmony House chain.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so he was my roommate back in the day before I even got with Warner's, and I had to work my way up, so I schlepped records at Handelman's, you know, on the east side of Detroit, which was pretty wild. But there's one thing I want to leave you with is on the Promotion Man website, I have a photograph. And it's me and you and Bernie Taupin and Richard Woollett.
Wow.
And it was and then I have another one that has the Talking Heads, because it was 1978, and it was, and because we're doing the podcast, I'm kind of clear on the dates. But the Talking Heads were had just released "Take Me to the River" off of their latest album, which was more songs about buildings and food. So they're playing in Detroit, I think, at Masonic Temple, and you and Bernie had come out, and so we got a picture of you with the band.
Wow.
And I'm like 23 and I'm super young, and it was, I love that photo of me and you and Bernie and Richard.
Bernie and I wrote From the Inside together after I came out of the mental hospital for alcohol, and I told Bernie, I said, man, there are so many great characters. You and I are going to have a field day writing this album. So we both wrote the lyrics on that. And then we toured, From the Inside. But, the funny thing about the Talking Heads was we did a show with them in Rhode Island when they were in college. And they opened for us. And we played, then we went on. And right after that, David Byrne said he wrote Psycho Killer. About me.
Oh my God, that's great! What a great story.
That is awesome.
So I was really, I thought that was very cool that he wrote Psycho Killer about Alice Cooper.
That is amazing.
That's
story.
Awesome story. Can we use this on our podcast, please?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Well, Alice, thanks for calling in today. It's actually, KLBJ is going to be celebrating the 46th anniversary of this radio station, believe it or not, in the same format for 46 years, rocking Austin.
Wow,
so
that's great. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. And it's quite an honor to have you as the headliner for that, man. So thank you for being on the show today on KLBJ.
Okay, great. And like I said, if it's that special, I will bring a very special guest.
Oh, I can't wait. Can't wait, man.
Okay, cool.
Thank you, Alice. Take care, man.
Bye-bye.
So that was pretty incredible, because Alice basically debunked that myth that Psycho Killer from the Talking Heads was written about Son of Sam, who was wrecking havoc in New York,
mm-hmm.
when it was actually written about Alice Cooper.
And I've never heard that till today.
I've never heard that either. And I have to tell you, I'm still friends with Chris France and Tina Weymouth, so I'm gonna get some clarification on this.
We got to get them on the show.
I think we can. I think we will. In fact, I think we're going to have quite a few guests. Well, since we've done this podcast and since we've done the Alice Cooper interview and we had an opportunity to go see the show together in Austin.
Yeah.
I had reached out to Wayne Kramer from MC5.
Wow.
And he would like to do an interview with us.
Great.
So I think, if it's cool with you, maybe we could start out season 2, episode 1, with Wayne Kramer of MC5's kind of point of view of the whole Detroit thing and what was going on for him. And then I'll definitely reach out to the Talking Heads and see if we can get them lined up as well.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great way to end season 1 today with Alice, start off with Wayne for season 2. And, we'd like to hear from you and get your feedback, too. I mean, this was our first guest that we had on today, but I really liked having the guest element on there along with our conversation, because if you really listen to this podcast again and listen to what Alice Cooper said in the few minutes we had on here, he literally recapped episodes 1 through 7 of Promotion Man.
It was really uncanny how he did that. And in such a short period of time, which, kind of validates what we've been talking about.
Right. Yeah, if you do like hearing the guest on here, give us your feedback at Promotion Man. You can definitely send email to Fred or myself and link up to us. Like all our social media, you'll find at promotion-man.com. Subscribe to the podcast. Share it with your friends, because it is very grassroots. It's very organic. And we love the fact that we're getting so much positive feedback, for sure.
Yeah, this has been really a blast. And I'm really looking forward to kicking off season 2, because I can tell you for sure we're going to have Wayne Kramer of MC5. We're going to be talking about Prince. We're going to be talking about U2. We're going to talk about the Talking Heads, who we'll have an interview with.
Yeah.
And then we've got some other special guests that are lined up as well. So I think you guys are in for a treat.
Other Promotion men and women may be stopping by throughout season 2 as well.
Yep, definitely. And that's really where we can get some great stories about, you know, bands that were on other record labels.
Right. So thank you. It's been a great blast hanging out with you, Fred, for 8 episodes. And, man, we're just off, and I can't wait for season 2.
Me too. Thanks.
Promotion Man, the true backstories of the most iconic bands in the world, told by Fred Myers and interviewed by me, L.A. Lloyd. Get involved and interact on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You'll find the links at promotion-man.com. That's promotion-man.com. Download the weekly Promotion Man podcast on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Play, or your favorite podcast provider. We appreciate you subscribing and spreading the word, and thanks for listening.